Thanks, Greg. Yes, we've just caught up with the conductor, Bernard Labadie. Welcome back to Philadelphia.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be back here.
Well, this is a beautiful program, all Mozart. Could you talk a little bit about the shape of it?
The core of the program from the beginning was the Requiem. That was the proposal from the orchestra. I tried to build the first half that would be coherent with it and that we'd create a nice preparation for it. And actually, starting with the Masonic funeral music is absolutely, totally in sync with the Requiem, because we know that the Requiem has a lot of Masonic symbols in it, the use of basset horns, for instance. There are two in, this is an instrument that for Mozart was really associated with his friends who were members of the same loge with the brothers. So in the Masonic funeral music, we heard three basset horns, which is a very unusual combination. We know it's a piece that he wrote for the funeral of two members of the loge that he was a member of in Vienna. So that's absolutely perfect introduction to the Requiem. The symphony in G minor, which we often call the little G minor, as opposed to the big number 40, it's a fascinating piece, written in Salzburg, but obviously influenced by the Sturm und Drang movement that Haydn had used so much in all of his symphonies in minor keys. The little Mozart symphony is very, very passionate with syncopated rhythms, sometimes harsh harmonies, and what is exceptional for him, because he doesn't use that often, he uses four horns, and even I would say four high horns, two horns in high B flat and two horns in G, which creates an extremely tense color in the symphony. It gives it a color of its own. There's no other symphony by Mozart that has this instrumental combination, and the restlessness and the angst behind the music is also, I believe, a perfect pathway to the Requiem.
Well, it's interesting because he wrote it when he was just 17 years old. But he'd already written several dozen symphonies already.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and by his late teens, Mozart was a totally accomplished composer. He had done it all already. Even though it's a youthful piece, it already shows a composer with a lot of skills and a lot of imagination, too.
For people who aren't that familiar with the Masonic tradition, you mentioned that the first piece was written for one of his friends who was a Mason. What was the significance of that to him?
We know that he had been a member for a long time. He actually also was a member with Haydn. Haydn was a member of the same loge in Vienna. For him, it was truly a brotherhood. And back then, there was no tension between the Masonic movement and the church. It was totally accepted. And Mozart wrote a lot of music for these occasions. This one is the most famous. It's also certainly the deepest and the most complex. It also quotes a beautiful Cantus Firmus, Gregorian Cantus Firmus, which comes from, the text comes from the Book of Lamentations. It's this beautiful, aching melody in the music, which is framed by a grand introduction and conclusion.
Wow. So what does Mozart as a composer mean to you? And in particular, the Requiem, because I understand it was the first piece you conducted after 9/11.
Yeah, actually, it's just a twist of fate. With my orchestra and my choir, we were supposed to take part in a festival for Quebecer musicians in New York at Lincoln Center. It was a double bill. We're doing Haydn's Nelson Mass and Mozart's Requiem. And of course, 9/11 happened and that whole festival was canceled. But because we were a poor organization, we hadn't planned to fly our people to the state. We had planned to go by bus. So as you remember, all airports were closed. It was impossible to fly, but you could cross the border on a bus. We had discussions with people at the Lincoln Center who said, look, we understand if you decide not to come, but if you can come and do the concert, we need it so badly right now. So we decided to go, and actually we performed it in Troy, New York, a few days before we do it in Lincoln Center, and that provided the basis for our recording. The concert in Troy was recorded by Dorian back then, and 2 days later we performed it at Lincoln Center. And I remember that the emotion was palpable. The emotion was so strong, so thick with the people who were listening to this music. And I remember that the concert was broadcast by NPR, but in mono, because the stereo antenna was on top of the World Trade Center and had been destroyed. So these were very, very important moments for us and for myself as a conductor. So ever since, the Mozart Requiem has always held a very, very special place in my life.
And I gather there's always been some mystery about it, about how much he composed, and there are different editions of it.
Yeah, we'll never know exactly. I'm using the edition by the great pianist and musicologist Robert Levin. who was a great friend of mine. Robert is the greatest Mozart mind, among other things, on this planet. And I think what he's done with the score is absolutely perfect, because he's kept pretty much the structure of the Zosmaya, but he has corrected the million flaws. He has written better transitions. He has reorchestrated a lot of stuff, which now sounds transparent in the same way that Mozart was writing for voices. I mean, if you look at how the orchestra accompanies the voices in Magic Flute, it's extremely light, extremely transparent. And if you look at the Zosmaya completion of the Requiem, it's super thick. The basset horns and the bassoons double the voices all the time. The orchestra plays way too much. And that's not what Mozart was doing by the end of his life. So Robert has, with his immense knowledge of Mozart's music, he has, I believe, given us a solution, which of course is not what Mozart would have done if he had completed the piece. That we'll never know. But I think it's in spirit, it is as close as it can be to the true Mozart.
So you recorded this with your orchestra,
Le Violon du Roi,
and the choir that goes with it, La Chapelle
de Quebec. Yeah, that's it.
So what are the challenges and joys of taking it elsewhere when you come to a different orchestra, a big orchestra, and a different choir?
Well, it's a piece that I've conducted as a guest probably hundreds of times, so I do it regularly with other groups. I'm a so-called performance practice specialist. That is that I do the music from the 18th century up to the early 19th century, applying the principles of what we call performance practice. That is this whole movement that is geared toward rediscovering how music from the past centuries was played, always in order not to recreate the music of the past, because we'll never know exactly what it sounded like, but just try to be true to the letter of it, to get rid of the many layers of varnish that traditions have added over the years, and just go to the original information and then turn it into a truly modern performance. So my job with them over a few days of work is to help them, to guide the musicians, help them how to find colors, articulations, phrasings that will allow this music to come to life. And I have to say that the orchestra has been exceptionally open-minded in rehearsal. These musicians, they can play anything, so they're super flexible. They don't mind changing the way they use vibrato, the way they use the bow with the strings, the different articulations, the different ornaments. They're afraid of nothing and ready for everything. So that makes my job a lot easier. It's not always that easy as a guest conductor to do that with an orchestra that is not used to the language, but with the mighty Philadelphia Orchestra, it's been a pure joy all week.
Do you recall the piece of music that made you want to be a conductor?
It's definitely Bach. I would say it's either the Christmas Oratorio or the B minor Mass. I will conduct the B minor Mass again in 3 weeks with my groups. And I know that I will pull out from my library the little pocket score that I bought with my paperboy's money when I was 12 for Christmas. And I had asked my mother to buy me the LPs, the recording. And I remember that Christmas vacation when I was 12, I spent it entirely in B minor Mass, just listening to it over and over and over again and reading the score. And I still have this little pocket score, which falls apart now. I keep it as a talisman, which I put on the stand when I conduct the piece.
Well, I noticed you conduct without a baton,
and
your hands are very expressive. I guess the conductor's body is his instrument.
Yeah, absolutely. The body is there to reflect, to transmit the ideas that we have. I now conduct seated because I went through a serious bout with cancer a few years ago. I survived but came out with a certain number of sequels. One of them is that I cannot stand for a long time and I have a problem with my feet, so I need to be seated.
Did that change the way you approach music other than conducting seated and using your hands?
It changed my way of approaching life, including music, of course. You know, when you come that close to not coming back, every morning is a gift. What really matters for me now is the absolute pleasure of making music with people, the human side of music making, the collaboration, the companionship, the fact that we are building something together to bring to the audience, and we're trying to together to understand this music and to make it better.
Is it possible to describe what music means to you, why it's important to you?
It's very difficult to describe. I mean, music is an essential part of me. It's my everything. I don't know what I would do for a living if I wouldn't be a musician. So I hope I will be able to keep doing it for a very, very long time.
Well, thank you so much, Bernard Labadie.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you.